ओम ज्ञानदेवराजस्य ज्ञानार्जन शलाखया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। सो टुडे वी आर डूइंग द लेसन टू ऑफ यूनिट फोर। सो वी वुड लाइक टू गो थ्रू सम रिविजन फ्रॉम लेसन वन। सो वुड यू लाइक टू रिवाइज some points from the previous lesson that we had. First, what is this lesson? This is about chapter 7 of Bhagavad Gita. So, what is the content of chapter 7? It's a knowledge of the Absolute, a bit more specifically.
It's about Krishna speaking about his own knowledge. I mean, how he has been perverted.
Yes, that's a very nice point. That is, Krishna is speaking about himself, how he has perverted throughout the material universe.
He was talking about the 24 material elements. In this chapter, he talked about 10 material elements.
Yes.
How he has been expanded.
That's right.
And also, he is telling Arjuna how to become, to be on that platform just by hearing.
Okay, that's good. Anything else from this, what we have covered from previous class? What are the few important points that we covered in the last class?
Knowing Krishna by hearing.
Knowing Krishna by hearing, tachrunu. Yes, that was a significant point from the verse number 1 of the 7th chapter. We discussed about mayasakta manaha. So what is the significance of mayasakta manaha?
Mind attached to Krishna. That is the primary thing as well as the ultimate thing. That's what we discussed.
Yeah. Can anyone explain what is it meant by mayasakta manaha? As you have explained, it is mind attached to Krishna. So what is the significance of that? That's very interesting, because initially when Krishna used the term Mai, that in itself is defeating impersonalism, because Krishna is saying unto me. So it is he is a person, so he is telling, okay, unto me. You had to develop attachment to me. So that is defeating impersonalism, that's right. And when you say mind attached to, on one level, it is in our devotional activity, we are trying to develop attachment to Krishna. And that attachment, when it is perfected, then it can be the rasas, the mellows that is experiencing in the spiritual world, the 5 primary rasas and the 7 secondary rasas. So that can be the maya asakta manaha. So Srila Prabhupada points out that point, that is ultimate sense, this asakti, this attachment, that is mellow in the devotional service. Now, what is the process of attaining this attachment to Krishna? How can one develop attachment to Krishna?
Hearing,
that's right. Hearing. And there are a series of verses quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto. And what is the significance, or what are the significance of these verses to obtain mayasakta manaha? Why Prabhupada quotes those verses? Which are those verses? Very famous verses, at least. Yes, that's right. Shrinodam Sakatha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanaha. So starting from, what is the significance of that order and why those chunk of verses are presented there?
Because it describes the 9 stages from
Shraddha. Exactly. Because right from hearing, how can one develop basic Shraddha, that is basic faith in Krishna consciousness up till the perfected Prema. So that is condensed in those five verses. That is the essence Srila Prabhupada quotes these five verses in the purport to the first verse itself. Then we also try to understand what is Jnanam and Vijnanam. So what is Jnanam and Vijnanam? Okay, one answer came, numinous and phenomenal. So Jnanam is phenomenal, meaning?
Jnanam is phenomenal, it's material.
Material, and Vijnanam is numinous, meaning it's spiritual. And apart from that, someone told something else.
Jnanam is knowledge.
Yeah, that's right. Jnanam is pretty much theoretical and Vijnanam is
spiritual.
And there also we went through a very interesting definition. That is, when we say Jnanam means understanding the different energies of Krishna, and these energies are coming from this understanding is Jnanam. And Vijnanam means using these energies in service of Krishna. In other words, practical devotion service, that is Vijnanam. So that is a further explanation on this Jnanam and Vijnanam. Then we went through Yatatam Api Siddhanam. So what is the significance of Yatatam Api Siddhanam?
The practitioners
speaking like this, the protection. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Different yogis, sorry? Yes. And that can only be known by? Only by bhakti. So, yatatabhavi siddhana, even people can get perfection like karma siddhi, material perfection, jnana siddhi, because of the speculative knowledge, jnana siddhi can be personal liberation, and yoga siddhi can be paramatma realization, or yoga siddhi can be material siddhis, which one can obtain through yoga. But having obtained these different kinds of siddhis, one cannot understand Krishna, because Krishna can only be known by devotion service, the bhakti yoga. So it actually tells what is the qualification to know Krishna, that is nothing but devotion service. Then explains two kinds of energies of Krishna, because how Krishna manifests his opulence in the material world. And these are the Prakriti Ashtata, means the eightfold energies of Krishna. That is earth, water, fire, ether, mind, intelligence, force, ego. So the eightfold energies of Krishna. Then a superior to that, there is one energy that is known as the living entities. Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho Yetam Dharyate Jagat. Then the most amazing thing is that the living entities are coming in control, or the superior energy is coming in control of the inferior energy. Is it right?
Yes.
So that is very interesting, because one can wonder why it happens. So that will be covered further. Then we also discuss seeing Krishna. In what context did we discuss seeing Krishna? In everything and everywhere. Taste of water. Yeah.
Sound in ether.
Yeah. So while drinking water, or Prabhupada says, if somebody is drunk, if somebody is consuming alcohol, since it is a liquid, and if somebody is drinking and thinking this taste is coming from Krishna, that is also some degree of Krishna consciousness. So to that degree, so one can perceive Krishna in so many different ways. And regarding the sound, Prabhupada says, okay, in Mumbai it is so noisy, but still, if you hear any sound and thinks that, okay, this sound is ultimately coming from Krishna, if one thinks in that way, then that is also Krishna consciousness. So, numerous ways of remembering Krishna. So today, in the lesson 2, what we are going to do is, actually it is lesson 1, part 2, rather I should call. Here, we will conclude the point how Krishna is the source of everything, and after that we will move on to who actually surrenders to Krishna and who do not surrender to Krishna. So these two categories, because as we explain this chapter,
in the beginning itself it's mentioned that this chapter explains the whole opulence of Krishna and the manifestation of opulence of Krishna in the material world, and who surrenders unto Krishna and who do not. Having said this, here in verse 12 it is Yechaiva Sattvika Bhava Rajasas Tamasaschaje Matta Evetitan Vithi Matu Nattuham Teshute Mayi. So, now that all states of being, be they of goodness, passion or ignorance, are manifested by my energy, I am in one sense everything, but I am independent. I am not under the modes of material nature, for they, on the contrary, are within me. So first point that I would like to say is, in previous verses Krishna pointed out many things, like first Bhumirapanalavayu, that is different material energy that is inferior, then about the spirit soul which is superior, and after that how to perceive Krishna in different material objects, starting from Rasoham of Sukhavanteya, Prabhasmi, Shashi Suryo. So here, whatever is mentioned, they are all in the mode of goodness. Punyogandha Pradivyamcha, right? Punyogandha is a purified smell of the earth. So whatever is mentioned, it's in the mode of goodness. Shabdam Khe, or Pranava Sarva Vedeshu. So all these things are pretty much in the mode of goodness. Then one may wonder, is that only things in the mode of goodness, or things are which are very natural, are they only coming from Krishna, or is there anything else coming from Krishna? So here Krishna concludes that it's not just the things which are in the mode of goodness, but whatever is in the mode of passion as well as ignorance are ultimately coming from Krishna, or the source is Krishna himself. So that's the reason here it's mentioned, Ye Chaiva Sattvika Bhava Rajasas Tamasas Chaye. So it's not just the Sattvika Bhava, it's not just things which are in the mode of goodness, but whatever is in Rajasa, whatever is in passion, whatever is in ignorance, Tamasa, all are coming from Krishna, are manifested by my energy. Then Krishna makes it very clear, I am in one sense everything, because everything is Krishna, because everything is Krishna's energy. It's not that Krishna is transforming. You know, that is one thing we have to understand. Krishna is not transforming into the taste of water. Krishna is not transforming into himself, into something else. No. They are all Krishna's energy, that's all. So Krishna makes it clear. So they are manifested by my energy. I am in one sense everything, but I am independent. Krishna is independent. And I am not under the modes of material nature. So one can think, if all the material modes are ultimately coming from Krishna, whether it is possible that the modes can control Krishna. Krishna clearly states here, no, it's not possible. Modes of material nature are under Krishna, under Krishna's control. And I am not under the modes of material nature, for they, on the contrary, are within me. So modes are within me, is within Krishna's control, but the modes cannot control Krishna. At the same time, they are coming from Krishna. So this is the relationship between the different material modes and Krishna. Now, to explain this point, the very nice analogy is given, that is of a king and his subjects. So king can actually pass any kind of laws to control the citizens, to control the subjects. There are state laws, but the king is not under the state law. King is not subjected to state laws. The state laws are coming from the king, but he is not subjected to the state laws. So this is the connection between the modes of material nature and Krishna. Modes are coming from Krishna, but modes cannot control Krishna. Similarly, state laws are coming from king, but state laws cannot control the king, because he is independent.
can be the same example which we heard in the last class regarding that microphone example which Prabhupada gave.
In the microphone example, the point is mentioned. What is the key feature that is mentioned in the microphone example?
It's the same energy coming from me, but it becomes separated.
Exactly. The point there is separated. So that analogy is given to explain how the material energy is separated.
Okay. But here, he's talking about the three modes, right? They are separated, my separated energies. So we can think in the same example.
Yes, you can think in the same example, but at the same time, there is a difference. The difference is that here, when it comes to the laws, because we are considering how the modes cannot control Krishna, so that control element is coming. So that to explain that control element, this law and the king and the subjects are used, because the laws can control the subjects, but the laws cannot control the king. At the same time, the laws are coming from the king. You see, so that's the reason that analogy is quite apt in this context. It's very clear that everything is under Krishna. All the three modes of material nature by which the whole material universes are created, everything is coming from Krishna. Then one could ask, then why people are not interested in surrendering unto Krishna? It's a fact. If you think about, yes, that, you know, everything is coming from Krishna. We, our own existence, our material body, our material mind, different elements, even the three modes of material nature, which is pervaded, everything in this material world. Still, why people are not interested in surrendering unto Krishna? That's right. So the living entities are bewildered. So that is explained in the next. Tribhir guna maye bhave ebhi sarvam itam jagat mohitam nabhijanati maam ebhya param avayam. So Krishna says, deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion and ignorance, the whole world does not know me who am above the modes and inexhaustible. So the living entities are bewildered, deluded by the three modes, material nature. So here we have to understand two points. One is, Krishna is behind the material energy, and at the same time Krishna is aloof from the material energy. Whereas living entities are bewildered by the material energy, trapped by the three modes of material nature. Yes, Prabhu.
So sorry, very simple question,
Prabhu.
It's hard for me to understand. How is the three modes of material, you're saying that all three modes are controlling the everything, different nature?
I'll explain again in a simple fashion. So, different modes. Okay, if you had to, and maybe I had explained in a complicated way. In a practical way, yes. For example, morning, Brahma Murta, it is pretty much, it's in the mode of goodness. And as the time progresses, more and more passion predominates, and when it goes sunset and night, ignorance predominates. So as devotees, we don't have to go to karmis. Suppose if we are trying to chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra in the morning, it is reasonably easier to absorb the mind in the holy name. And lunchtime, towards the lunch, when sun is already there up in the sky and it's warm, and then when we start chanting, the mind starts agitating, start different thoughts, it becomes, it's not more the same, it's not anymore the same controlling the mind and fixing mind upon the holy name. And you go through the whole day and go through the evening and night, start chanting, then it becomes even more difficult to concentrate our mind upon the holy name, because we are affected by the mode of ignorance. So even if just with chanting if you take, if you attempt to chant and if you see how the modes are affected, the modes are affected. We are affected by the modes of material nature. Then, if you consider non-devotees, it's very interesting to see that the whole life is completely affected by the three modes of material nature. And primarily, passion and ignorance. The tongue demands for passionate footsteps. The tongue demands for food in the mode of ignorance. There is a natural affinity towards that. If you pick Bhagavad Gita and if you go through the plates, through the pictures, there is a very nice picture. Like three, you know, few people are there, one person is chanting and three modes, just like a puppet show, right? The three modes are actually pulling him. Move here, okay, yeah. So the three modes are affected such that if you see some food, something in the mode of ignorance, immediately the tongue is telling, yeah, it's very nice, let's go and eat meat. Why people are eating meat is affected, that attraction is there. Just immediately go and grab it. Attraction is there, from the sense objects to the senses. Both are influenced by the mode of ignorance. See the sense object, that is made of three modes of material nature. And our senses, that is also made of three modes of material nature. And there is a natural affinity between these two. And it's attracted. Naturally it's attracted. Ignorance is so predominant. People in ignorance, people think whatever is good as bad. And whatever is bad as best for us. All the four illicit activities, right? All the four, you know, meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling. For a conditioned soul, because he is bound by the three modes of material nature, he thinks that these four things are the best of enjoyment. This is so, so nice. This is my life. This is the fun in life. This is the most enjoyable thing in my life. Why? This is actually binding. This is not the nature of the soul. At all. Soul is not influenced by, originally, the pure spirit soul is not influenced by any of these things. But because of ignorance, he is attached to these things. First to the mind, then to the body, and the objects which are connected to the body and the mind. See how we are controlled. People think I am making the right decision because I like to eat something, yeah, I am going and buying. But actually, something else is running. Three modes of material nature are working. The whole senses are made of three modes of material nature, and the object is also made of three modes of material nature. And that strong attraction comes and one is actually going and just buying.
Mode of ignorance is stronger than mode of passion?
That depends on which mode one is affected by. One person could be affected more by the modes of ignorance. Some could be more by the passion. As you know, we will see further in Bhagavad Gita how these modes work. You know, mode of ignorance means lazy, you know, unclean, doesn't want to do anything. Passion means more active, passionate for self gratification.
That's in the control of the human being, or
that? What is that?
Is that in the control of the human being?
Which one?
Which mode is affected by the mode?
By default, it's not in our control. If we don't have higher knowledge, we are just under the spell of modes of material nature. Under the spell.
So which mode affects the person the most is not in the control of the person?
It is like this. According to our karma, we are affected by certain modes. Our mind, our subtle body is created according to certain. It has a proclivity towards some kind of modes. Say for instance, one person can be born more affected by the mode of goodness. He'll be more calm, peaceful, etc. Some could be affected by the mode of passion by default. It's according to one's karma. So one is ultimately responsible. Then one is more passionate. You know, running around doing things, more active, that is mode of passion. One could be affected more by the mode of ignorance. There, what happens is, you know, lazy, he doesn't want to do anything, just sleeping whole day or whatever. There are some people who enjoy sleeping like anything. 12 hours, 14 hours, 15 hours, it's normal, their normal life. There are people like that. This is by default, they are influenced by the mode of ignorance. So, our subtle body is created in such a way that, you know, it has more influence towards something, one of these modes. And when an external object comes, then we get trapped into those kind of things. Then the question arises, is there anything in our control? Yes, things are in our control, but we need some higher knowledge. We can be in ignorance, we can be in passion, we can be in goodness. But when the knowledge comes, when the transfer of knowledge comes, then one can go beyond these modes. Because we can engage in the devotional service, then we can actually, all the ignorance can be destroyed, passion can be destroyed, come to the mode of goodness and ultimately transcend the mode of goodness. So yes, there is a possibility of control with higher knowledge. So without higher knowledge is pretty much the same thing. Doesn't matter which mode, because still in the material world, right? One is influenced by the goodness, passion or ignorance. The suffering varies, that's all. Still, both happiness and suffering in the material world, both are suffering. So ultimately it's just suffering, it is again in the material world. So without transcendental knowledge there is no possibility of control. We cannot say we can control the situation. No, it's not possible. So in that way we can say, okay, there is no control, because there is no transcendental knowledge. But with transcendental knowledge, yes, we can control. That's important. So that's why we had to understand. That's the reason with knowledge we had to understand, how is our environment, you know, are we, our rooms, are we trying to clean something, how is our cupboard, how is our house, how is the floor, you know. That has to be routine checks. Because otherwise we will be influenced by the mode of ignorance. If things are unclean, naturally our mind will be affected by that. Even if we are devotees. We are not pure devotees. We are influenced by the external circumstances. So if something is in the mode of ignorance and if we are associating with that, then we get influenced. You see how we get influenced? We get influenced. Our mind can become a bit agitated. It can also lead to mode of ignorance. Thoughts may not be very clear because we are influenced by the mode of ignorance. So one has to, okay, make sure externally things are clean. Then of course we chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is transcendental, so it can naturally destroy the, you know, the Rajogun, Tamogun, and bring us to Sattva and then to Shuddha Sattva, to transcendental goodness. Like that. One has to understand there is a possibility of control. That is very important. So this conclusion of the 13th verse is that, okay, Krishna is behind the three modes of material nature and Krishna is aloof from that. At the same time, the living entities are under the control of three modes of material nature, and so they are not interested in surrendering unto the Lord of feet of Krishna. And think, and the living entities in the spiritual world, they are fully surrendered, they don't have any trouble. They don't have any trouble getting up and, you know, waking up for Mangalarati or worshipping Krishna or cooking for Krishna or glorifying Krishna. Naturally, they are dancing and glorifying Krishna all the time because they are not affected by the modes of material nature at all. Now, we will go to the other question we asked. How then the inferior energy, because modes of material nature are inferior to the living entity, which is superior, because we are conscious, but the modes are unconscious, so it is inferior. Then, how is it possible that this inferior energy could control the superior energy? It's an interesting point, because how can the inferior energy can control the superior energy, which is not the case usually? So that is explained in the 14th verse, which is very, very famous. Right? So we can all chant together. Ready? 7:14. Devi hi esha gunamayi mama maya duratya mam eva ye prabhatyante maya metam tarantite. This divine energy of mind, consisting of three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Now, we will read a little bit of purport, because it is very, very profound, very interesting purport. Here it is explained why the inferior energy could control the superior energy. As previously stated, both the material and spiritual natures, being emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are eternal. The living entities belong to the eternal superior nature of the Lord, but due to contamination by the inferior nature, matter, their illusion is also eternal. We'll repeat that point. Their illusion is also eternal. Okay? So, in other words, we are eternally illusioned. We had a single word. Now, it's explained. The conditioned soul is therefore called Nitya Baddha. Nitya Baddha, okay? Or eternally conditioned. No one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned at a certain date in material history. So there are different calendars, right? In any calendar you take, you cannot actually find when this living entity got conditioned. No one can calculate that time. Consequently, his release from the clutches of material nature is very difficult, even though that material nature is an inferior energy, because material nature is ultimately conducted by the Supreme Will, which the living entity cannot overcome. So here it gives two interesting points. One is, we are Nitya Baddha, we are eternally conditioned, we are eternally illusioned, because it is very difficult to calculate when we got actually conditioned. In other words, when we fell into this material pool, we don't know. And it is far beyond our calculation. So it is eternal. Then, next point is, why we are controlled by the inferior energy? The reason is, that is under the will of the Supreme Lord. So, because it is under the conducted by the Supreme Will, we are under the influence of inferior energy. Any questions on this?
Is it because of our desires we are under it, or is it like God's supreme will? I expected that question. It's a very nice point to think.
Because it's a very, if you think about this point, it's a very important and subtle point. It's mentioned here as conducted by the Supreme Will. Say, one side we understand, we came to the material world because of our desire. So that's what we usually, if we ask, why are we in the material world? So we say, okay, it is that we desired. Then why is it written here that conducted by the Supreme Will? It's an important point for us to understand. Any thoughts?
Prabhu, can we understand in this way, we came by our own desire for the material world. But this material world is being controlled by Krishna because he is the one who is controlling it. So we are in that way we can understand the point. We are trying to control the material nature, which is impossible for us.
Yeah.
In that way we are always controlled because this material world is always being controlled by Krishna. Because we are in this world, we have to be controlled by Krishna.
Yes. So that is after, pretty much looks like, you know, after coming to the material world, we are being fully under the control of Krishna in that sense. Yeah, that is one point. Other than that, in terms of falling down to the material world.
Like the example of jail, if there is any jail in any country or in any state, then it is also part of the energy of the government.
Yeah.
And this material world is compared analogically, allegorically to the jail.
That's right.
The whole creation. So everything in a jail is conducted by the will of, means under the governance of government only.
Yeah.
Though it is a little bit different.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. These are actually close to what I thought. The only thing is, okay, the living entity can desire to enjoy separate from the Lord, but only by Krishna's sanction that can be facilitated. So it is even just to come to the material world, the process of falling down, that is also facilitated by Krishna himself. Even that is also facilitated by the will of the Supreme Lord. It's like, say, see, first of all, there has to be a material world, as you pointed out, just like a jail. We need to have gross and subtle bodies. We need to have the whole mechanism, how the whole thing is working here in the material world. So everything is facilitated by the Supreme Lord, and Supreme Lord's will, we are actually placed into this present house. So right from the beginning, the Lord's hand is there. So if we analyze what is the ultimate cause, we say, okay, that is ultimate cause is, we can say, you know, Supreme Lord's will. That is the ultimate powerful. That's the reason we are here. You know, we desire, but in terms of action, it is because of His will. So if He doesn't sanction, then we cannot be here. Even if we desire. You understand the point? Even if we desire to enjoy separate from Krishna, without the will of the Supreme Lord, it is not possible for us to be in the material world. In that sense, we can say, okay, it is under the conduct of the Supreme Will. Is that point clear?
Well, are there any examples in which the living entity would have desired and Krishna would have said no?
Krishna would have?
Said no.
Krishna would have said no.
No. No.
Actually, Krishna always tells no. Krishna never wants any devotees to suffer. Krishna is always telling no. Now also he is telling no. Are we ready? Now also Krishna is telling no, right? Within the heart, in the form of spiritual master, in the form of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is telling no. Don't enjoy here. Stop the sense gratification. Focus fully on bhakti. You come, we go back home. Back to God. Krishna is telling no. what are we telling? Krishna, hold on. We have so many things to do. You know, we are so busy, you know, we are trying to, you know, so many, such an important place, so many things to do, you know. How can you be so impatient? At least after 10 or 15 years we can think about it. Now, you know, we have to do so many different things. So we have to understand our own example now. Right now. Don't worry about past, you know. Don't go off, you know, we already mentioned, like, you know, condition, when we were conditioned, it is eternally, you know, so don't worry about that. Now, think about now, current situation, so, like that, we can understand.
Maybe the particular example is the Krishna
Like the super, Prabhupada gives the example of how the super soul indicates. Because even to steal something, you know that example, to steal something, super soul has to sanction. So Prabhupada says, if a thief is desiring to steal something, so the thief is so insistent, so Krishna says, okay, he is desiring, okay, yes, you go and steal. The super soul is sanctioning that also. Krishna is sanctioning within the heart. It's not that he is very happy, yes, it's good that he is stealing, then I can punish him. You know, yeah, I'll get an opportunity to punish him through the material. You know, he's not thinking like that. What's your point?
The same point only I was saying, that when you settle for what you see, that after serving so long, they left the moment, but somehow Krishna arranged the situation that they again.
Who?
Some senior disciple of Prabhupada who initially was serving him, they left the moment.
Yeah.
At the end of their life, somehow Krishna arranged that they again came back to devotees.
Yeah.
And Krishna gives the opportunity.
Krishna constantly gives the opportunity. Like, he is situated within the heart. Whenever we are actually, as the famous example says, you know, two birds, the tree, on the tree, one is ourselves we are trying to enjoy, and the other bird is super soul. Super soul is constantly looking. When is he going to turn towards me? So when that desire comes, then Krishna fulfills. Krishna is very happy to do so.
Last week you said to me, yes, come to the Bhagavad.
That's right, yeah, that's the reason Krishna came personally to help us. He doesn't have to come actually, but he came. Okay, now. So how can the jiva be released? Here again, purport says, another meaning of guna is rope. So that's the reason in the Bhagavad Gita illustrations we can see rope. You know, people are, it's like a puppet show. The ropes are, it's interesting, in the puppet show you cannot, many times we can't actually notice the ropes. It's very thin and tiny. We can only see the action. In the same way here also people are acting very nicely in so many different ways. But the ropes we cannot see. Because that ropes are invisible ropes of modes of material nature. passion, goodness and ignorance. So ropes, it is to be understood that conditioned source is tightly tied by the ropes of illusion. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be helped by a person who is unbound, because the bound cannot help the bound. The rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. People have a thought that, okay, I can make my way out from the prison, house of material nature. But it's mentioned very clearly, it's not possible, because we are already tied and another person is also tied, then how are you going to help each other? So it's not possible. So we need somebody who is liberated. So it can be the Lord himself or generally his representative, the spiritual master or liberated devotees. So the solution looks pretty simple, that is surrender unto Krishna and then one can be released from the modes of material nature. So it looks good, right? Now there are a couple of verses in which first verse 7:15 it is mentioned why people do not surrender unto Krishna. Okay, so that is very interesting. The reason is we can see that in this world in front of our eyes, and we will have a role play as well regarding this. So regarding 7:15 and 16. So we'll first go through 7:15. So we can chant together 7:15. Namam duskritino mudha prabhadyante naradhamaha maya bhagada jnana asuram bhavam ashritaha. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons do not surrender unto me. In the purport, in the beginning itself, it is mentioned, Prabhupada writes, but if the liberation is possible by simply surrendering unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then why don't these intelligent and hard-working leaders adopt this simple method? And Prabhupada writes, the Gita answers this question very frankly. So now we can hear a very wonderful explanation of Srila Prabhupada.
Yesterday, my call is gone. Today is your turn.
Hey, call is. See? Jay, you also.
Thank you.
together with them.
Hope you had a good break. Sorry for that. Okay. So it's a very interesting Dushkritina. So Dushkritina, the term is, so it's very interesting. Even from each word, Prabhupada is actually bringing out so much of meaning. Nama, Dushkritina, Mudha, then Naradhama, Maya, Abhudagyan, Asura. So from all these words, Prabhupada is actually bringing forth very interesting purpose. So here Dushkritina, but because the atheist brain is improperly utilized in opposing the plan of the Supreme Lord, the atheistic plan maker is called Dushkriti, which indicates that his intelligence and efforts are misdirected. Now, there are four kinds of Dushkritis, four kinds of Dushkritinas. First one is Mudha. Mudha. So first called it grossly foolish. And who is grossly foolish? That first category is hard-working beasts of burden. They want to enjoy the fruits of their labor by themselves and so do not want to part with them for the Supreme. The typical example of the beast of burden is the ass.
Okay.
Ass is known to work very hard. And what is the ass thinks that he can get a little bit of grass, green grass, by the mercy of his master. But at the end of the day, he just works so hard and gets a little bit of grass, which is even everywhere available. He is actually carrying heavy stuff from, you know, even the mountains and on the fields and here and there. And he's walking, the right side there is a lot of grass, left side there is a lot of grass. But he's thinking, even if he carries so much of load from one direction to the other end, and then the master will feed him such a little bit of grass. Okay, that is the only way to get some grass. So that is ass. This is ass mentality. So materialistic people who are working too hard and there is no time for Krishna, they are known as mudhas. Okay. And the most interesting thing is that mudhas, they don't have even, there is not even time to enjoy the fruits of their hard work. This is the sad situation of mudhas. So they are foolish. Here Prabhupada writes, in all despite the fact that the mudhas enjoy only a very small fraction of the fruits of labor. And also Prabhupada gives the example, the swine who eat the nice soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. Similarly, the foolish worker will untiringly continue to hear of the sense enjoyable tidings of the flickering mundane world, but will have very little time to hear about the eternal living force that moves the material world. That's a very powerful statement. And the next kind of Dushkriti is Naradhama. And as the word itself means, Nara means human beings, mankind. Adhama means the lowest. So this is about the lowest among the mankind. Out of the 8,400,000 different species of living beings, there are 400,000 human species. Out of these, there are numerous lower forms of human life that are mostly uncivilized. The civilized human beings are those who have regulative principles of social, political and religious life. Those who are socially and politically developed but who have no religious principles must be considered Naradhamas. And here there is a beautiful mention about Lord Nityananda's mercy for Naradhamas. Whom did Lord Nityananda save?
who are the typical Jagai and Madhai. So what are the key features that we can understand from Lord Nityananda's pastime with Jagai and Madhai? On first time, first, what is the prime motive? Everyone knows the pastime, right? How Lord Nityananda approached Jagai and Madhai. So what is the prime motive behind approaching Jagai and Madhai? Yeah. So what we can try to see is the mood of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and we can see how the same mood is manifested by Srila Prabhupada. So what is the mood in which Lord Nityananda approached Jagai and Madhai to deliver them because of compassion? So that is one point that we can understand, the compassion aspect. Then, which is other? To glorify Mahaprabhu. Yes, that is glorifying the Supreme Lord. Then next point, can anyone briefly tell the pastime? What happened? Very briefly. Like instance wise.
Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Nityananda Prabhu and Mr. Brahma. Both of them to go and deliver, spread the holy name to every person in the village. And both of them went, and they have seen these two miscreant brothers. People were talking very bad about them, and when he had looked at them, he felt very compassionate. If we deliver, then Lord Chaitanya's glories will be proclaimed everywhere.
That's right. They want to deliver them, so that they had compassion for them. So if they deliver, the glories of Lord Chaitanya will spread all around the world. That is one point. Then what happened? What is the next incident?
They were chased.
Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur were chased by Jagai and Madhai. Then what happened?
They eventually got away, but then Jagai and Madhai was hearing their kirtan and things like that. And then over time, later on, they came across Nityananda Prabhu.
First day they couldn't. They were chased away, and after that they returned, right?
They returned back again.
So what does that show?
Determination.
Determination. That's right. So first point we can see, they had compassion, then they had determination, then actually they.
Tolerance.
What is
that? That time, Lord Nityananda went and told him to chant. But he was in a drunken mood.
Yeah.
He got very angry. He
fell
in the pot. Before that, when I heard that example from a spiritual Mahan, Purujan Prabhu in one lecture was telling, Lord Nityananda Prabhu was in Krishna, he is Balaram. In the Naimisharanya, Shuddha Goswami's father, Ram Maharsha, when he was giving the lecture, he did not get up.
Yeah.
Same Lord, he punished him with the grass.
This was
a kill. And now in this pastime, he is Nityananda and he was so forgiving. He was so compassionate and he showed a lot of tolerance. Even though they
very good point. So that's the Prabhu also mentioned, tolerance. So primarily we can see in this pastime, Lord Nityananda primarily manifested three qualities. One is compassion. Second is determination, and third is
tolerance.
So, can we discuss in terms of Srila Prabhupada how he actually manifested these qualities in terms of delivering the whole world? Okay, so that's one point. He had two heart attacks, still he continued. So what quality does that show?
Determination.
Yeah.
He also wanted to glorify Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yeah, he wanted to.
And his Guru
Maharaj. That's a very good point. He wanted to glorify Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and also he wanted to glorify his Guru Maharaj.
Also, when he arrived at Boston Airport, he writes this poem where he prays to Krishna and asks him why he doesn't know why have you brought me here.
Yeah.
He can only see all the people who are so fallen and whether they will be able to understand it or not. But he left on God. So it shows like how compassionate he was towards such a fallen, because he went to the big place where nobody was interested in Krishna. And also when he started in Nero, he went to the place where there were all drunkards and LSD.
Yes.
And so the most fallen place.
Yeah.
So that shows how compassionate
he
was.
That's right. He even chose the most fallen place, I think.
Yeah.
Right? First he went to Boston, then he understood, no, I should go to New York. So he actually chose the most fallen place. And even in New York, he chose the even most fallen place, was the Bowery. So that was all these kinds of people were living. So you can see how Prabhu exactly manifested, that is, choosing the actually Jaga and Madais of this world. He chose them to preach to. So exactly, you know, there is a one-to-one correlation that we can see. That time only there was one Jagai and Madai. Here he chose a group of Jagais and Madais who were, you know, really intense, the concentration of Jagais and Madais in one area. And Prabhupada lived there and delivered them. So such a, you know, exact, you know, one-to-one mapping between these two events. And we discussed compassion, that's very nice, and determination, tolerance. You made one point that was nice. His things were stolen. Still, Prabhu continued. Any other?
Also,
no.
Also, in Sydney, he prays to Lord. He's living. He is in the hands of the Malaysians.
Mm.
So he's. So he was showing how tolerant he was, even though all his disciples were not so
qualified. That's right. Yeah.
And many times, even on his Vyas Puja, he taught them how to perform a proper Vyas Puja.
Very good point.
So he tolerated.
So if you try to understand that, the first point that Prabhu pointed out, that in Sydney, Srila Prabhupada prayed to Radha Govinda to teach this Malaychas how to worship you. So think about Prabhupada's position. Prabhupada is a pure devotee. So think how much affection he has for Krishna. How much affection, love he has for Radha Govinda. You know, if we try to understand, we cannot actually understand, but think, a person who is very, very dear. So that is Krishna and Radharani for Srila Prabhupada. And he understands that this disqualification of his disciples, because they are very new and they don't have any cultural background as such, just coming from the street, from pretty much animalistic life, and now just started the devotional service. And to entrust them to serve the Supreme Lord, you know, how much, you know, he must have felt, you know, how much of, you know, there should be some emotional, you know, exchange, there will be a lot of feeling for the deities. So with that he is telling, okay, please take care of them. So he's actually tolerating his own disciples and giving those disciples to directly in the hand of the Supreme Lord to actually train them, because Prabhupada cannot be there and there was no senior devotee who can train these devotees. So that is really a lot of tolerance. Because why? Because if they take care of the deities, then they will become advanced. Because that is, at that point, that is the only way they could be advanced. Well, there is no other way. They need the deities, because they will get the mercy from the deities if they serve, and it could be improper, and then the Lord has to show some compassion to them. So it's a, you know, quite a few things happening there. And the next one was, okay, Prabhupada actually tolerated disciples in terms of, you know, Vyas Puja, which was, you know, not properly organized. Prabhupada actually trained them. Prabhupada has to do everything actually.
Can we say Prabhu in this regard that one day his typewriter or some manuscripts have been stolen and he once again compiled the whole
Yeah, that was in India. his whole Bhagavad Gita manuscript was stolen. So that is, that shows he tolerated that and he had determination. So he wrote it again. What was the reaction when all his Bhagavad Gita initial translations were stolen? Yeah, it is will of the Lord. Then? Yeah, it is his will of the Lord. Yes, that's right. He said if Krishna can give with 10 hands, how much can I take? And if he can take away things with his 10 hands, what, you know, what can I hold on to? So that was a, you know, that was a reaction immediately Srila Prabhupada had. So that shows full surrender. In the conditioned state, what happens? Frustration. People will be, you know, swearing or, you know, just it's just how. So this is transcendental consciousness. Any other point? You have a Leela. Juhu temple. What does that show? Provost mode of?
Determination.
Determination, eh? Yeah, determination.
Prabhu, regarding determination, Srimati Maharaj, what's her lady name? Srimati Maharaj.
Yeah.
She was telling Prabhupada, you are so very old, please don't go, you'll die.
Mm.
And Prabhupada said one something very wonderful. Let her better die in serving the mode of my spiritual master. That was really the strongest determination.
Yes.
Even in the deathbed, he was giving the
Prabhupada
in the last moments.
Yes, that's right. That is another. And the last one is deathbed, Prabhupada was giving Prabhupada Bhaktivedanta performance.
Even his confidence in Lord Yamantya
was one place when he was going to preach. Yeah. He tolerated whatever offenses or whatever statements made by his near and dear God brothers, who he tolerated all to fulfill the mission of his spiritual master. So we are getting mercy of Lord Nityananda through Srila Prabhupada, and that's how the Naradhamas, lowest among the mankind, are being saved. Next class is Dushkriti, is called Maya Apahuda Gyan. Or those persons whose erudite knowledge has been nullified by the influence of illusory material energy. They are mostly very learned fellows, great philosophers, poets, literary scientists, etc. But the illusory energy misguides them, and therefore they disobey the Supreme Lord. Prabhu says even there are scholars of Bhagavad Gita, they are also Maya Bharata Gyan. They have a lot of knowledge, but that knowledge is actually stolen by Maya Devi. So virtually of no use, but they can create harm. Prabhu also says unauthorized interpretation of Bhagavad Gita. They are also into the category of Maya Bhagavad Gita. They think they are scholars of Bhagavad Gita, but their name is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita itself. That is Maya Bhagavad Gita. As I have told before also, you know, there are people, you know, I know one person, you know, studied and written notes of 200 commentaries on Bhagavad Gita. He has studied 200 commentaries on Bhagavad Gita. 200 commentaries. He told me. He said, I can show you my notes. 200 commentaries of Bhagavad Gita. We can't even hardly read one Bhaktivedanta purport, one Bhagavad Gita as it is properly. And he has written 200 commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, and he has written his own commentary on Bhagavad Gita. After studying 200 commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, his own commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna is not there in the commentary. Krishna is not important at all in the whole commentary. So he is a classic example of Maya Bhagavad Gita. So this is Maya Bhagavad Gita. They don't have any parampara assets. They are unauthorized. And the final dushkruti is Asuram Bhavam Ashritaha. Asuram Bhavam Ashritaha means those who are demons basically. They are openly atheistic. They deny Krishna. They are openly reject the whole religiosity, then they reject the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada also says even the impersonalists, they are also fall into the category of asuram bhavam asritaha, or they are also asuras. In one lecture Prabhupada says two kinds of people want impersonal liberation, or they get impersonal liberation. One is asuras, you know, who are killed by Krishna. There's so many asuras are killed by Krishna, they get impersonal liberation. And also impersonalists, they also want impersonal liberation. These are the two categories. So the ultimate objective of, you know, what the demons can get, that is desired by even this Mayavadis. Even the Mayavadis cannot get it straight away. That's a different thing. So it's clear, four kinds of people who do not surrender to Krishna. Mutha, working too much, working hard, no time for Krishna. Then Naradhama, lowest of the mankind, who are civilized but there is no place for Krishna. Then Maya Abhrita Gyan, those who are the philosophers and leaders of the society who are very big erudite scholars, but they have missed the point. They do not know about Krishna. Even though they write commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, still they don't acknowledge Krishna. And finally, Asura, the professed atheist. Now Krishna says, there are four kinds of people who surrender unto Krishna. They are Chaturvidha, Bhajantema, Jana, Sukrutino Arjuna, Arto, Jigyasir, Arthati, Jnani, Cha, Bharata, Shabha. O best among the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me, the distressed, the desirer of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. So from nectar devotion, can anyone remember these kinds of four kinds of people who approach Krishna? They are classified as neophytes, but who are they? Gajendra. He falls in which category? Distressed. Then? Dhruva Maharaj, desirer of wealth. And? Sages of Naimisharanya, inquisitive. And? For Kumaras, fall into the category of searching for the Absolute Truth. Yeah, and Shukadeva Goswami. Yes. Jadash Kumar. Yes. The Prabhupada writes in one lecture, he talks about foolishness of Arthati. Foolishness of one who is after wealth. Or even foolishness of one who is distressed and who approaches the Supreme Lord. He is pious, he is distressed, but at the same time he is foolish. Why he is foolish? Because he does not know that God is with me, within my heart. He is sitting along with me, the soul and the super soul. Both of them are sitting together and God knows everything about me. So I do not require to pray from God to get me out of this distress. He knows everything. Why shall I pray? He leaves everything to God. He does not pray. He prays to glorify the God. Now, how great you are, not for his personal interest. O God, give me my bread. Give me my dress. Give me my shelter. And we can add on so many things. So it's mentioned, it's not, he's foolish because the Lord knows. He is ready to take care of all his devotees, all the living entities. So, Arthati, who is after money and who is distressed, they pray to the Supreme Lord, which is foolish. And also it is mentioned, superior than this Arthati and inquisitive person, Jigyasu is, better than the distressed and the desire of wealth is one who is inquisitive. That is an important point. Why? Not necessarily that he wants to know the Supreme Lord, but at least he wants to know, he is after knowledge. Some, he wants to know what is present, which is a bit higher. Say, for Ardhati, who is after money, he doesn't care about God as such. He doesn't care about Krishna. He goes to Krishna and he wants the money. That is his objective. And one who is distressed, he wants to get out of the distress. That's all. We can see many people even come to the temple, right? Who is after money, they put some money in the hundi and they pray, okay, I have put in a few dollars. Then Krishna kindly give me, you know, few thousand dollars hike in my salary. Get me a better job so that I can earn more money. So this is who is after money. Many people, if you take, the visitors, many people will be in this category. Who wants more money? So they approach Krishna, which is good, it's not bad, even though it's foolish. Then second is who is distressed. Distressed people, definitely, they come to Krishna, they see the Lord, some people faint in front of the Lord, some people start crying. It's not out of ecstasy, but they start crying. Because they are so distressed. One Janmashtami, one lady came here, there in the front, came in front of Radha Vallabha and, fainted in tears. And one could think, it's a higher platform of devotional service or anything, but this is, somebody took her, somebody carried her, put her in the reception and, fan and all this kind of thing. Then finally she told, she's going through a tough time. So she got fainted, and she said, the whole pain was coming out and collapsed. So which is good, because they are ultimately coming to Krishna. That way it is good, but still it is foolish. It's considered foolish. Because this Artharthi and Jigyasu, they should come to the platform of at least inquisitive. Artharthi and who is Artha and Artharthi, they should come to the platform of Jigyasu. They should come to the platform of inquisitive, because then start thinking, why, inquisitive means, everyone comes to this point, what am I doing in this world? Why am I suffering? Is there anything beyond? All these kind of questions. So that is kind of inquisitive. Like, even if you preach, it happens, right? Initially, Prabhu, I have no job, I have not this, and I have no job, I don't have money, I don't have accommodation. Have you seen this kind of people? When you preach especially, we see, I have this problem, I have other problem, right? So this is the typical case of, Artha and maybe Artharthi. Prabhu, I have, I have 6 months, I am searching for job. Right? It's true, it's a fact. And then when we actually go through that phase, then they don't ask question, who am I, why am I in the material world, who is Krishna? They don't ask this kind of question, right? They'll be, Prabhu, I don't have a job. Each time we see, they will be telling, Prabhu, I don't have any job, I don't have PR, I don't have this, I don't have that. They'll keep going with these troubles all the time. Then when their distress is a little reduced, when they are a little bit okay, then they are not too much worried about these things. Then they start, Bhagavad Gita, yeah, that's interesting, I'm suffering, and this is because I am the Spirit Soul, okay, the Supreme Lord. They ask some questions, okay, why is like this, what is karma? They ask such questions. Can you see that progression? If you preach, you can see this progression. Initially, somebody who is completely after a job and money and etc. After some time, if they do associate with the devotees, then slowly when they actually bit settle, then they start asking some questions. They come to the platform of inquisitivity, which is considered good. And higher than that is Jnani. Jnani means who is really after the absolute knowledge. I don't think, you won't find so many straight away coming and, tell me about the absolute truth. Give me full information regarding, Brahmaedi, Paramatmaedi, Bhagavani, the Shabda, give me the whole details. People don't come to that platform. There could be a few, but not many. It's interesting, many times when people are coming in the platform of Artha or Artharthi, it is very difficult to convince any philosophical point. It doesn't get in. It doesn't go inside. Whatever, however we try, people will be again, going through the same loop. I'm suffering, so give me some solutions for my suffering rather than, dumping all this philosophy into my head. People will be just constantly thinking this point. Has anyone this experience? When their suffering was gone, a little bit reduced by the mercy of Krishna, then they could actually understand more Krishna consciousness and could take more interest in Krishna consciousness. I have that experience. You have that experience? I have at least. Yeah? When in the suffering phase it was, you know, it's okay, a little bit of understanding was there, but when things materially reduced a little bit, the financial issues went down, okay, things are fine. Then I could, okay, more faith increased, okay, I'll understand more. More coming to the platform of inquisitiveness. And I can ask a general question. Of these four categories, okay, all of us have come to Krishna consciousness. So how do you classify yourself? Why did you come to Krishna consciousness? Was it distress, after wealth, inquisitive, or knowledge of the absolute? Distress. Anything else? What is that? Or combination, it can be a few combinations. Can be partly distress and some inquisitiveness, like that, it is possible. Who came because of the philosophy? Yeah, yes, kind of, yeah. So that is an element of.
I started coming to prove that I was always a restaurant rather than
stressed. Yeah.
And then when I started thinking more about the absolute, because I'd had that association with that person.
Yeah.
The main reason why I started coming to the temple was for the
restaurant.
Yeah. Because when I started going, money was not a problem, depending on parents only.
Yeah, that's right.
And then,
Shadow
India food, and
then
the problem is not there.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah. So there was no issue of money or distress.
At that time, but later it came.
Later it came. Okay, so we have a combination of reasons. Generally, it will be distress. For many people, it will be distress.
With the progress in our spiritual life, we can, when we reflect back as to how we come in Krishna consciousness, and if the distress is the cause of the reason, we can understand it was the mercy of the Lord who put us into that situation so that we could come into Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it would happen.
Yeah, we can see in that position, in that sense as well. But at the same time, we had to understand the reason for us coming, not necessarily we were completely, you know, liberated platform. Where we are completely no material affinities, no the absolute truths. Now we will do a role play after this. Can you collect the print? You can cut it into four pieces and so I'll read out what are we going to do. This is who generally it is who surrender and who do not surrender unto Krishna. This is the topic. And each group, we can have four groups. And each group, one who surrenders and one who do not surrender. That will be given. Okay. And each group should enact a role play that brings out the respective characteristics of one who surrenders and one who do not, reflecting the examples from the contemporary society. Okay. And at the end, each role play identify the examples from the contemporary society and discuss the respective characteristics. So from the current society, take some example and then you can enact. So there's no overlap because we have 2, 2, 2, 2, so four groups. So you can form groups now yourself.
This four category, Jnana Indriya. They are not armchair philosophers.
No. We will talk about Jnanis in the next verse. Actually, anyway, I'll tell a little bit regarding the Jnani. Here, Gyani Krishna talks about, especially in the next verse, it is not just a Gyani who is after the impersonal liberation as such, but a Gyani who has actually given up his impersonal pursuit, and he understands Krishna is the Supreme, and now he is trying to engage in the devotional service. So when he is just trying to understand the Absolute, he is in Gyani position, that is a neophyte stage, as a four neophytes who tries to understand Krishna. But Gyani, which is mentioned in the next verse, that is one who has actually given up the impersonal conception, and he understands Krishna as the Supreme, and now he has started engaging in pure devotional service. So, yeah.
Generally,
Gyanis get association in the material world from the devotees, then they can get out from that conception.
From this Supreme Brahman, they can't upgrade themselves?
Generally, it is mentioned, it is, I have heard in one lecture, if one get association there, if a devotee travels through the Brahman without getting merging, you know, he's traveling through, if he gets some association, one could progress from the impersonal Brahman. But generally, they fall down, that's what Prabhupada said. Are you recording? Are you recording? Okay, Prabhuji, so we have the choice.
It won't last for me. Battery is flat. So
Platinum.
I'm not sure. You know where it will.
Yeah. Prabhuji, keep recording that one. Don't stop.